Food is the language everyone speaks, but do we truly understand it?
Between the conversations over organic food and GMOs, different diets taking the world by storm, and how what we eat actually impacts our environment,
there's no shortage of things to learn about. Hi, I'm Karel Vega.
And I'm Cheryl Kirschenbaum, and this is Serving Up Science. Welcome to Serving Up Science, this series all about food, where it comes from, and how it impacts our health and planet. I'm Cheryl Kirschenbaum.
And I'm Karel Vega.
And today we're going to explore a little bit of history.
You've been talking to me about this since before the show debuted.
I love history. Once upon a time, I was a classics major, and I just got hooked.
So there's a lot to say about history and food.
Of course.
Let's get to it. Where do you want to start?
Benjamin Franklin.
Our $100 founding father and the notorious kite flyer.
The same one.
Okay, did he invent something related to food?
He was our founding foodie, Karel.
Seriously?
It's true. He was an original locavore too, and he vocally advocated for produce grown in the colonies because he wanted to limit foreign imports.
Can you explain the word locavore to me?
Sure. Locavore, there's a whole prominent movement, and it's people pushing for things grown near where they are. So some of it's to save energy because of the miles traveled for food. Some of it's to get the most fresh, healthiest food available. There's pros and cons to the idea, but Benjamin Franklin, he wanted his food grown in the colonies.
So you're saying he wanted to make American food great?
He did. You might say that at least. And when he was abroad, he even had his wife, Deborah, ship barrels of apples and cranberries to him all the way from home to Europe.
I'm thinking this would have been kind of a big deal in the 1700s.
It was, and it took a very long time. But it was worth it in Ben's eyes because he tied food to patriotism. And when he heard people in London speaking badly about colonial cuisine, he composed a long treatise extolling the virtues of New World food.
That said what?
Just to give you an example, he calls Indian corn, and I quote, "one of the most agreeable and wholesome grains in the world, a delicacy beyond expression."
I guess the guy really liked corn. I didn't read about any of that in my history textbooks.
And did you know Franklin thought the turkey would be a better national bird than the bald eagle?
I can't really imagine that, although it would be interesting.
There was a great miniseries on HBO, John Adams, where they captured Benjamin Franklin pretty well, and they even included his musings on food now and then. Let's listen to a clip.
"Go gently, I beg you. You are a guest in Philadelphia. Fish and guests stink after 3 days."
Wow, he's much more colorful in reality than I thought.
Colorful and influential. He also influenced tastes abroad.
How so?
Well, Franklin helped to popularize potatoes in France as a potential solution to farming challenges. He even inspired an entire French banquet where potatoes were served in every dish, including dessert.
Did it work?
It worked so well that years later, the French extolled potatoes as a revolutionary food.
If waffle fries are included, I'm gonna agree.
And he was personally interested in diet and health. Throughout his life, Franklin tried different diets, and he became a vegetarian on and off after reading as a teen that vegetarianism promoted clearness of ideas and quickness of thought.
So I guess there were diet fads in the colonial era that are still popular today.
Of course. And he wrote down recipes in detail while offering advice, such as squeamish stomachs cannot eat without pickles.
Is that true?
Maybe for a few people. But most importantly, and the reason I wanted to talk about Benjamin Franklin, is that like us, he did his best to understand food, even though it was difficult to find reliable information in the 1700s.
I mean, it's difficult in 2018, and he couldn't have even created a podcast.
I'm afraid not. Although that sure would have been a great podcast. He was always interested in where food came from, how it was prepared, and the ways it could influence his health.
Kind of like Serving Up Science.
Speaking of serving up science, we've covered a lot of science.
And the history.
But not the serving part yet.
What do you have in mind?
Next week, let's trade recipes and see what happens.
What kind of food are you thinking?
Some kind of childhood cultural comfort food we both enjoyed.
Okay, I like this. What are you going to give me?
I'm thinking kugel.
Kugel?
There are different recipes, but you've got a toddler like I do, so I'm going to give you a sweet recipe rather than savory. Think of it as like a Jewish egg noodle dish.
Sounds good. Challenge accepted.
And what do you have for me?
Well, I'm going to have you try one of my most cherished dishes growing up and one of my mom's specialties, pozole.
Pozole. I like the way that sounds. Tell me more.
Well, in a nutshell, it's basically a savory Mexican stew with hominy, which not many people are familiar with. And you throw that in a pot with some meat, onions, spices, and then you garnish it with a ton of delicious stuff.
I'm excited.
The idea behind this whole thing is that by trading recipes from each other's cultures, we might be able to expand our ideas of what's possible to make in your kitchen.
And expand our palates.
We'll share the experience of trying new recipes as we cook and report back about how we did next week.
We'll also share the recipes we try online if listeners want to give it a go as well.
You've been listening to Serving Up Science, the series all about food, where it comes from, and how it impacts our health and our planet. I'm Karel Vega.
And I'm Cheryl Kirschenbaum, and this is WKAR.